Welcome to Greens vs. Blacks, a weekly House of the Dragon podcast. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Michelle.
We're two House of the Dragon fans who have decided to rewatch and recap season one whilst we wait impatiently for season two. Join us as we explore the lore and mythology of Westeros and the rise and fall of House Targaryen. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, King Joseph-eria.
Okay.
That's my best attempt to Martinify your name.
Does our status change from episode to episode? Is this
yes.
where we're going? Okay,
yes.
That's you were yes. really excited then. Your face lit up.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and this week you're the king and I'm the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard.
Oh, I was going to say, what's the Westerosi equivalent of a little match girl? I saw you in a burlap sack maybe, shivering somewhere, but still defiant.
One of Varys's little birds.
Feels a little bit hashtag me too.
Or but. Well, yeah, or just some sort of impoverished sex worker. There's a lot of underclasses, really.
Michelle number five from the pillow house down the
yeah,
street.
Yeah, or an unsullied. You know, your name changes every day.
So yes. Well, I feel like that most of the time anyway.
Yeah, so today I could be Melly Dog or something.
Can I just say, listeners, Michelle chose that name all by herself. That's
no,
not scripted.
No, Joseph forced me to say it.
Well.
Because he's the king.
Anyway. What have you been up to? How's life? How's Easter been for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, happy Easter, everyone. We're recording this
happy
on
Easter.
Easter Monday. So we are full of eggs and chocolate. I've eaten a lot this weekend. Yeah.
You've eaten a lot of eggs. Have you given a lot of eggs?
No, I haven't actually eaten any chocolate Easter eggs at all. But I've eaten a lot of other food.
Oh, okay. Mm. I thought you just said you've eaten a lot of eggs.
Eggs.
Oh, eggs. Yes, I completely...
Actual chicken eggs.
I've got Easter brain. I actually forgot that there are real ovums out
yeah,
there.
Real eggs.
I should say over.
I don't like thinking of them as...
Well, I was just giving it the Latin plural. But
you are correct. How about you? Have you been egged up?
We don't buy Easter eggs in our house because we're very greedy and we like our chocolate. So we just buy massive bars of chocolate.
Well, that makes sense because...
And then we get very sick eating it all.
The egg itself is actually quite often not very good chocolate.
It's not.
The quality, unless you spend a lot of money on an Easter egg, they're cheap Easter eggs are not very nice.
It's what my grandmother used to call shoe leather chocolate.
Yeah, or like cooking chocolate that you used to get that was too sugary.
Like
and
Bourneville.
Yeah, not enough cocoa butter and stuff in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. But I am going to go today because obviously now the eggs will be cheap and go and get some for my boy.
You're going to game the system.
Okay, yes, absolutely. So I've been watching quite a lot of TV because it's been a holiday weekend.
Yep.
And I thought while we wait for season two, we could talk a little bit about what we've been watching. So I've been enjoying Shogun.
I'm on episode two.
Oh, catch up.
And I want to read the book as well. I feel like I want to now go back and read the book before I watch it anymore.
I think I did read the book, but this would have been back in the 70s, so or 80s.
When did it come out?
I think the book was written in the 70s, and then there was the Richard Chamberlain miniseries was in the 80s. And my mum was a massive Richard Chamberlain fan.
Didn't know that.
So we had to watch it. And I remember because they kept saying, Anjin-san, and I didn't think I really understood what it meant, but I quite liked the way it sounded.
Does that just mean Mrs. Angie?
No, Anjin is a navigator. San is Mr., so it's like Mr. Navigator. But in Japanese, it sounds cooler. But this new version of Shogun is very much, it's been compared to Game of Thrones, but basically set in medieval Japan and without the magical supernatural
I'm loving it so
elements.
Far, I have to say.
Yeah.
Fantastic casting.
It's amazing casting. And one of the things that I really appreciated, because I lived in Japan for 2 years, is that the Japanese people speak Japanese to each other. Obviously, you can watch a dubbed version, but I watch it with subtitles. And it's really enjoyable because it really puts you in that position of the Anjin, Blackthorn, because you don't know what people are talking about. And so a lot of the time you're relying on the subtitles and on the translation.
Yeah.
So it's really good because it's like often people will start off speaking in another language and then they'll just fade into English. And
I hate that. That's one of my big pet peeves.
Yeah, it's an absolute beef when they do that because these are Japanese people. So of course they would be speaking Japanese to each other. And I like that they haven't made any concession to that at all. I think it's great. The performances are amazing. The visual effects.
The costumes,
everything. And it feels really authentic. And I think it's marvellous. Marvellous, marvellous entertainment. And the other little thing I watched, which I actually binged, I don't do this normally, but I did binge it. It's called Renegade Nell, which is Sally Wainwright, who did Gentleman Jack.
Now, you've recommended this to me.
Yes. It's a romp.
I'm looking forward to watching it.
It's a really, really good fun romp about it. It's set in Georgian England. It does have a supernatural element, but basically it's about this young woman called Nell who's falsely accused of murder and becomes the most notorious highwaywoman in the country.
Okay.
Yeah. And
I'm sold.
And then she just has adventures. Gallops around on horses having adventures.
And did you say it's got one of the actors from the Derry Girls in it?
Yes. Yes.
Which one?
I don't remember her
name.
One
of them, they're all great.
She's the one who plays Aula.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I can't remember her actual name. It begins with L, but I've forgotten what it is. But yeah, no, it's great. It's just entertaining. Probably more aimed at a slightly younger audience than something like Gentleman Jack.
Oh, I like Gentleman Jack. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But that same, it's a lot of that kind of humour.
I'll give it a go and remind me which platform is it on.
It is on Disney Plus, as is Shogun. Disney Plus is rocking at the moment. Every time I think I'm going to go, I don't need this subscription anymore. They bring out something
else. And then something
else.
New comes out. Yes. I know, it's an evil plan. I oscillate wildly between Disney Plus and Apple TV.
Yeah.
And I have that literally every month. I think, right, I'm cancelling it. I could spend that however much on coffees, avocados, on toast.
One avocado pretty much these days.
One avocado. And then they bring something out.
Yeah, it's really, really frustrating. And it's like Apple, I really like. I think they're doing really well with science fiction. And I think Disney Plus seem to be doing very well with these kind of... And because Disney Plus covers now, it's like Fox Searchlight. It seems to be FX. There's quite a lot of other production companies don't have their own platforms.
Yeah.
So they have the deals with Disney. So you get like loads
of
stuff
coming in. You get the highbrow, yeah, well-produced programs and shows. What's that Naomi Rapace...
Oh, I know what you mean.
Show. I can't remember if it's on Disney or Apple, but it's about an astronaut and she's had some kind of traumatic backstory and she's back on Earth. And I think I've watched half of the first episode where she's manically driving around with her very concerned younger daughter.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, having gone through that experience that she had in Prometheus, I would have thought she would have learned that she just needs to stay on Earth.
That automated medvac scene.
Oh, and the C-section.
Yes. Well, that's what I meant. Yeah. What did you... she had a filling.
Yeah. No, but that whole business... I mean, honestly, by that point, I was just like, this is ridiculous. You can't have a C-section and be running around 20 minutes later. It's just nonsense.
No. You need at least 2 weeks off work.
Yes.
I have been watching the Netflix adaptation of The Three-Body Problem.
Which of course Game of Thrones fans will know is produced by the
maestros themselves.
Game of Thrones.
So this is their new project that they've picked, and they've picked an ambitious set of novels. I don't know if have you read the books?
I haven't read them. I want to read them before I watch the show.
So it's three books, and I think they first started coming out in the late 80s or the 90s, and they're written by the hard sci-fi writer, Chinese sci-fi writer, Si Sin Liu. As a trilogy, they're called Remembrance of Earth's Past.
Oh.
So the first book is The Three-Body Problem. The second book is The Dark Forest. And the third book, which I've got on my bookshelf, actually, you can see it with the red spine. It's humongous.
I can see it.
Death's End.
Oh, and it is big.
So I've read them all. So I won't spoil the series, but it's basically about first contact. It's about a SETI program in the 60s or 70s in China and what happens when we make contact with an extraterrestrial force.
And a bit like Arrival.
It's like Arrival. It's really interesting in that it throws all of the kind of usual first contact tropes on their head, you know, where we make contact and it's a journey of discovery and it's all about sharing knowledge and there's like funny misunderstandings but we learn something from the other civilization.
Or they just come and bomb the shit out of us like an Independence Day.
Well, I was going to say, and I kind of feel like Independence Day is a bit of an outlier. And this is what Three-Body Problem is all about. It's about a civilization the Trisolarans, who live on a planet that's slowly dying.
Right.
Because of the situation they have with their solar system. They have a three-body problem. They have three suns, and their civilizations never get very far in terms of progressing with their technology because they're always obliterated by these three suns that come together in different combinations.
Oh.
So they've got to a point with their civilization where they've made contact with other planets.
Yeah.
Or they've sent out a message and they're throwing a hook into the stream and they're seeing who kind of like picks up. And unfortunately, Earth does.
Oh, yeah. Humans ruin everything.
Yeah, exactly. So then the program, I think it's 8 episodes. It takes in, I think, all of the first book and then a little bit of the second book as well.
And do you think it's a good adaptation? Because I've seen kind of some mixed reactions to it.
So in the book, so there's this virtual reality game that the aliens use to kind of snare people into right. their way of thinking, kind of like they create a cult on Earth using this virtual reality game. And I'd say in the show, the game is like something in episode 1 and 2. It's like briefly mentioned, and it's this this fancy VR headset. In the book, it's probably about half to two thirds of the book.
Oh.
It's a big deal.
Right.
Like explaining the universe, explaining the Trisolaran civilization. I mean, they're making a TV show. Obviously, they've got to gloss over a lot of that context. It'd be boring to watch.
And obviously, Dan and David, I can't remember their surnames, but as if they were my mates.
Dan and Dave.
Benioff and Weiss. That's their names. Anyone who, obviously, who's a Game of Thrones fan will know that the end of Game of Thrones was not a good end for them. And the reaction to the way that they ended Game of Thrones kind of ended their careers for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had a good sort of, it must have been 10 years where they've really been out in the wilderness.
It was like a really bad penalty kick miss on a World Cup game.
Yeah.
I mean, they
had the Star Wars gig they were supposed to be doing.
That got cancelled, didn't
canceled.
It?
Yeah. They lost so much work because of what happened with Game of Thrones. So I guess there's quite a lot riding on this for them to make a success of it. I've seen they've got quite a lot of cast that obviously worked with, like Liam Cunningham is in it.
Yes.
From Game of Thrones.
He's very good, actually. Mm. Okay, so my biggest beef with the adaptation, just briefly, because we want to talk about House of the Dragon. All of the scientists in the adaptation are beautiful. And I can't get on board with that. I can't get on board with, you know, a gang of 8 supermodels sitting around discussing nanotech.
But beautiful people can be clever.
They can be. But these people are irritatingly Vogue cover.
But
gorgeous.
Go back to Prometheus. I mean, when I watched that film, that was the thing. I remember just being enraged by the stupidity of the scientists in Prometheus. Because they just go, oh yeah, this all seems fine. Let's just go out exploring. And then one finds that weird snake thing. And, you know, you're on an alien planet. You don't understand these life forms. And you're like, oh, look, it's a little pet. I'm going to stroke it. And then that one gets bitten or something happens to him. And he knows he's got an alien life form inside.
Doesn't it jump into his mouth and eat him from the inside out?
And then he just goes back onto the spaceship. And it's like...
Quarantine?
Yeah, the protocols. And it's just like, it drove me mad. I was like, these people deserve to die. All of them. They literally deserve to die because they didn't pay any attention to even the most basic rules about encountering life forms that you've never encountered before.
Like all of that training they would have received, all of those protocols and checklists that they would needed to have followed. Is that someone important?
No. I will mute my...
That's Ridley Scott messaging Michelle to say, how dare you roast me? I had special scientific advisors on the set of Prometheus.
The worst special scientific advisors.
Yeah. You should have fired them, Ridley. The only other thing I want to say before we move on about the three-body problem is I kind of broadly enjoyed the 8-episode adaptation, the first season. Too much humour for me. The books aren't funny. The books are quite hard sci-fi and you just geek out and get into it. And they tried to make it a little bit bromancy with the series.
I think that's one of the problems, though, because that was a lot of people I know didn't like Foundation because they found it dry and slow. And
oh, I love that.
I love it.
Yeah.
But I think it is one of those things that can be quite divisive. So maybe they looked at how the responses to some of this hard sci-fi and gone, we need to just like soften some of the edges a bit. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not in their inner circle. I don't know their thinking.
They made it more about a friendship group.
Yeah.
And the book isn't about that. So. Yeah, anyway.
Fabulous. Well, that's our weekend's viewing and a few TV recommendations there. And now we are going to talk about episode 3 of House of the Dragon, entitled Second of His Name. Shall we jump straight into the recap?
Yep, let's do it.
You ready? So, Second of His Name, who does that title refer to?
I could see this in my notes.
Yes.
And I haven't done any kind of research or investigation into this. I have no idea.
Little baby Aegon.
Oh, I did have an idea. I thought it was Aegon, but I thought that this was a trick question.
No, it's not a trick question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he is, if he becomes the king, then he will be Aegon the Second.
Okay.
Yeah,
Occam's Razor.
Yeah. Sometimes the answer is the obvious
Sometimes.
Thing.
Sometimes. I'm not as stupid as I think I am.
The dog that barked in the night. So we have a time jump, the second time jump of this season.
Yep.
The first time jump was about 6 months, and now we are 3 years into the future.
Yep.
Alicent has her knees well and truly under the table with the king. She's had a baby. She is going to have another one. So we see that later
She's
on.
She's popping them out.
But poor woman. But we start off in the Stepstones. Things are obviously not going very well there. Now, one of the criticisms of House of the Dragon is that there's not a lot of humour in it, but I did laugh at this opening scene where there's this soldier who's been...
Bambi squashed by Godzilla.
Well, basically, he's been like tied down on the beach by the crab feeder and he sees Caraxes flying over and he's like, Prince Daemon, you're here, my prince, to save... As Caraxes' foot comes down and just squashes him, and that's the end of him. And Daemon doesn't even notice.
We should say he does actually say some quite choice words as well, doesn't he? Yeah, it's not all just like, please, my prince, save me. It's avenge me, these cunts are... wrong'uns.
Yes. So we see, though, obviously, that this little war, mini war, is not going particularly well for our Westerosi troops. The crab feeder, we see a bit more of him, and he is absolutely disgusting. He's wearing this funny mask, and I was thinking about that mask, and then what happens to Viserys by the end of the season?
Yes.
Is there something going on
there?
Lots
of foreshadowing there.
And we talked about him having grayscale, and apparently he does have grayscale.
I've contacted the interweb, and I've discovered that he does have grayscale. Yeah, absolutely.
The School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
Set aside some time for me for a sit-down meeting, and we discovered that the crab feeder's left arm is actually covered in grayscale. Mm. But I remember you saying, and I thought the same, he doesn't have it because he's clearly not that bothered about touching people and his fellow men, cave dwellers. So, but he is contagious.
So he should not be there, but clearly he doesn't care.
Well, I mean, having a good time feeding everyone to the crabs at the low tide.
Oh, this is interesting as well, what you're saying here about them, the mask and it...
Oh, yes.
Calling back the Sons of the Harpies mask.
Yes, it made me think of the Sons of the Harpies. So, yeah.
One of the plots of Game of Thrones that I did not enjoy.
I just didn't really feel like it went anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff where I think it was like when we cut over to Essos and Dany would just be shouting about her dragons and dealing with various slavers. I just didn't really enjoy most of those plots because it was just like, oh, please get to Westeros and like let's actually see that Game of Thrones really kick off.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I am not particularly enjoying the crab feeder.
No.
Second time round, rewatching, I think I swallowed it the first time. It was a bit of intrigue, a bit of action, and it got people mobilized.
Yeah.
This time round, I'm thinking, because by the end of the episode, we'll talk about what happens, but why was this here?
I think the steps...
Bigger dramatic purposes. But as a character, the crab feeder doesn't...
The crab feeder doesn't speak.
He's less than 5 minutes of screen time across a couple of episodes.
I think it's more about the stepstones being important and the divide between, you know, the different approaches of the Westerosi small council... That Daemon is so ready to get out there and fight, and that Viserys is just like, no, I can't be bothered. And I think it is setting up stuff for later.
Yeah.
Because obviously we do hear that these it's been left ungarrisoned, unprotected, and the Triarchy keep kind of coming back. So they will just keep get dropped into future episodes. So I think that's why it had to be introduced.
Yeah, I think it was setting up the shadow of the Triarchy as a future threat.
Yeah, because otherwise it would just be like episode 7, somebody would suddenly mention the Triarchy and you'd be like, what?
The Triarchy's at the door.
Yeah.
Oh, who are they?
Yeah.
The fact that they've been doing it for 3 years, though, that Daemon and co. had been battling with these pirates for 3 years, I didn't feel that this time round.
And I think that, you know, I mean, obviously part of the idea is that that's a guerrilla war, so that every time Caraxes and that comes in and screams and shrieks, but can't get in, they just melt into the caves.
Yeah.
And the dragons can't really do anything. I mean, they can breathe fire, but they can go further in and I guess just get out of range. And then they come out when the dragons go away.
These are the caves at Bloodstone.
If you say so.
What I'm saying. Oh, and I just wanted to say as well, just on the mask and the grayscale, a friend who's read Fire and Blood, not you, someone else.
So what?
There's two of you out there. You walk among us.
You'll be getting them on here next.
Crab feeder did not have grayscale or wear a mask in Fire and Blood, which is unsurprising. Yeah. So it's just there for dramatic effect.
I think it also makes...
It's another little throwback as well, isn't it?
And it's just another layer of disgustingness as well, which I think... We talked a little bit about kind of dehumanizing people and how that can actually make it easier to kind of see them as just someone to be killed.
Othered with grayscale.
Yeah. And he is so horrible. Daemon is trying to get into the caves and failing, but the crab feeders men have archery. Why can't I talk today?
They have archery.
They have archers.
That sounds painful.
They have archers. And
you can get things that you put in your shoes that help you walk. Please continue. queen, Michelle Ent.
Not today, remember? I'm one of the small folk.
Your burlap sack, I'll see. Back to the pillow house.
So Damon gets shot, and it's quite interesting, but as he is shot, Caraxes shrieks. And yeah, we've heard about in the past about this sort of psychic link between dragons and riders. And so you wonder if this is another evidence of it and how that works. Like the dragon and the rider kind of become one.
Well, I think there is definitely some kind of psychic or telepathic link there. Doesn't George R. R. Martin, to say his name correctly, talk about that?
Yeah.
I think he does. Yeah. And if we go later into season one, you mentioned it actually in our chat last week, when Arax is in the courtyard when Luke comes out and he's had that rough time trying to negotiate and has failed miserably, Arax is kind of shaking and scared and mirroring Luke's mood. And I think that also happens with Rhaenyra in an episode that we're going to talk about soon, where Syrax is in the background screeching and crying as Rhaenyra is very sadly having a miscarriage. Well, so this is kind of mirroring, this effective mirror.
And I think even with our animals, pets can often sense your mood.
They soak up the mood.
I mean, I know definitely with horses, where they say, like, if you're nervous, the horse will feel that you're nervous and tense.
Yeah.
Your riding experience will be harder because you're all tensed up and stiff and anxious.
Yeah.
And then the horse senses that too. So I think there's always a certain telepathy. But I think what we're seeing really as well is that, like, there is a bond between
almost a somatic link.
Yeah, those bonded pairs.
Yeah.
That goes beyond just the kind of, like, I know when I was a bit sad the other day, my dog came and kind of sat next to me and put his head on my knee and
paid a couple of your credit card bills.
That would be good. I need to get him on Instagram, pimp him out. So we move back to Westeros now. We leave the grim stepstones and we see where Viserys is planning a hunting party to celebrate the birthday. They call it a name day because obviously things are different in Westeros.
Nothing simple.
But his the name day of baby Aegon, who is Alicent Hightower's firstborn son.
See, I have to say Aegon. I refuse to say Aegon.
Aegon his face?
For that exact,
it is Easter.
For that exact reason. Please continue.
Now, the Hightowers, obviously, despite the fact that Otto was quite behind Rhaenyra initially in episode one, now the Hightowers are saying, this is our boy, let's get him on the throne.
Oh, yeah, this is 3 years
old. Yeah, so we see Otto's brother, older brother, who is Lord Hightower, I can't remember his first name, but he is the, like, the equivalent of Ned Stark or whatever. He's like the head of the house.
Yeah.
And he and Otto are scheming away, talking about how they can get him onto the throne, basically to push him forward and encourage Viserys to disinherit Rhaenyra and make Aegon the heir.
And that's one of the big dramatic tensions in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Is Otto and Alicent. Alicent is still very much supporting Rhaenyra up to the last.
I think poor Alicent is just trying very hard to do as is expected of her.
And I think she does a good job of it this episode.
And balancing.
Rhaenyra doesn't give much back.
No, and she's balancing between what her father's putting a certain amount of pressure on her.
Yeah.
And she is trying to, I think she also knows that if she goes in full bore to the king, kind of going, get rid of Rhaenyra and do that, he's just going to go, no.
Yeah.
So she has soft power. She can't demand things of anybody. She's only the queen because she's married to the king. She has no power of her own. And I think she realises that if she pushes too hard, it will backfire. So she has to take it gently. So again, we see Viserys. So it's all about the parties. He's with Viserys. He loves a party.
It really is all about parties.
All about parties. Work?
But no games. There's no Twister mats or anything. Or just even like a coconut
shy. Hell of a lot of booze.
There is a lot of booze.
So we see a Lannister. Da-da-da-da. A first introduction to, what happens when the Lannisters come in. This is the first glimpse we've seen of the Lannister family in this series. And this one is called Tyland. And he comes into the small council to talk very urgently about the situation in the Stepstones. But once again, as before, Viserys doesn't want to hear about it, know about it, or to send help.
Yeah.
He's just like, nap, nap, nap. We've done that. And
it's been happening for 3 years. It can wait 3 more days, I think he says.
It's all about my party. He also then asks where Rhaenyra is. And Kristen Cole is standing there, who's supposed to be with her all the time, and he says, I don't know.
But I guess it's 3 years on. He's not still on probation, is he?
He's still her sworn protector. He should know where she is.
But I mean, he's unsackable now. I mean, they can take it to HR, but they can't do anything with it.
Well, Westeros, like, chop off his head. I mean, I did think that he was not doing a great job there. He's supposed to know where she is.
Yeah.
Always.
I mean, there's a scene coming up where he basically screams across the hunting courtyard at her as she gallops off on her horse.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's not...
He's not doing a great job.
He's not a great security intel.
No, I think he needs to try harder. We then see Alicent managing to find Rhaenyra, who is in the Godswood reading a book and listening to a bard. And I did want to know if you'd recognise this bard.
I did recognise the bard. The bard is called Samwise.
Yes.
And he is played by comedian actor Johnny Weldon, who is Emma's hapless comedian boyfriend Ian in the Netflix adaptation of One Day.
I'm doing air quotes, comedian.
Yeah. Do you mean in the show?
In the show.
Or are you actually slandering poor Johnny Weldon?
No, not slandering Johnny Weldon, but in the show.
I don't know what... It's some kind of weird therapy.
Yeah.
Like he's beating himself up, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not very good at it.
But I think he's just... He's somewhere, as often people have this idea that women love men who make them laugh. So they try really hard to be funny. And I think he's nervous. He's trying to impress Emma and he's just riffing.
But it comes across a bit incel-ish.
Well, and also just manic. And I think she's
manic,
like,
yeah,
and 100%. She's sort of like, just breathe and stop and let's just talk like actual normal people. And then it's like he sort of goes, okay, and then he relaxes.
And also like stop cracking really bad jokes during sex or moments of intimacy.
Yes. Oh, yes, always. That is a rule. So we hear he's playing a ballad about Princess Nymeria, who we heard about last time when Alicent was testing Rhaenyra. So that's another callback.
Yeah.
And a callback again, that time they were in the Godswood with Rhaenyra had her head in Alicent's lap and they were the best of friends.
And now there's so much distance between them.
This rift between them. It's awful. Alicent is very heavily pregnant. She says, Rhaenyra, you've got to come to the party and the hunt is planned. And Rhaenyra is like, I don't want to. And Alicent says, the king orders you. I think Rhaenyra says, is it the king's order then? And then Rhaenyra is like, oh, at once, my queen. And it's really snippy and passive aggressive. And
it's mean girl behavior. Yeah. We expected more from Rhaenyra.
Yeah. And she's obviously just like, I'm not doing anything that you tell me to. But if the queen says it, and then Alicent's sort of doing that because she tells Samwell is Westerosi. Samwise is Lord of the Rings.
I'm going to say Samlicious. Samly. Samilton.
Let's just say Sam.
Sam.
So Sam.
His family would call him Sam.
Yeah. So Alicent says, stop playing. And then Rhaenyra says, keep playing. And then Alicent's like, the queen orders you to stop. And Rhaenyra's like, the princess orders you to carry on. So they're just,
Teenagers fighting over the Spotify account.
And they're just, every time it's like, I outrank you. And yet obviously Rhaenyra's the princess of the blood, whereas Alicent is only a wife of the king. So Rhaenyra probably does outrank Alicent, but she is not queen. And it is really sad because Alicent's, at the end, her little face, and she's just like, it doesn't need to be like this.
Yeah.
And it's awful. And I think you can see that Alicent has probably really tried to find a way where they can still be friends. And Rhaenyra's just not having it. And she is shitty. Rhaenyra is shitty and rude.
And she continues to be rude and sulky with her father in the next scene.
So then we're seeing them in a carriage and Rhaenyra carries on sulking. And then Alicent does make a very tactless remark about childbirth being easy.
Oh, which does not go down well. No. Even Viserys picks up on that and kind of like sucks his teeth.
Both of them sort of flinch.
Can I just say in this scene, I love all of the bombastic side eye from the ladies in waiting and the wet nurses. They're just the best.
But it is like one of those things where you imagine Alison says that and then just bites her tongue, but it's too late. She's already said it. Rhaenyra, no one is here for me. Well, yeah, that's true. But it is your brother's birthday.
Yeah, just chill the fuck for one moment.
Yeah, just
have some fun.
Let your dad enjoy himself.
Have some Dornish wine.
Let your dad be proud that he has his son, that long-awaited son. I mean, Rhaenyra is clearly just waiting for the day that her dad is going to turn around and go, I name Aegon the heir. And I think she's decided that's what's going to happen. And so because she's decided that's going to happen, she's sulking about something that hasn't actually happened yet.
Yeah.
And she's doing like all, I think she's, what's it called? Catastrophizing.
She's spiraling and catastrophizing, isn't she?
She needs to talk to a therapist and realize that she shouldn't anticipate. She should wait for her dad to say something and then she can be angry. There's no point in being angry now because it just makes her look bad.
Do they have therapists in Westeros?
No.
Mm.
But But she does need to talk to one.
But you don't even need a person. There's loads of apps nowadays, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, exactly.
She could find an old app with an E on the end.
I mean, that's kind of what all the maces and people are there for, to be
yeah,
talked
exactly.
to.
Yeah, you
know,
exactly. There what, are people lady, she could these talk ladies to. In waiting. Yeah.
I guess that Alison was her best friend, though. That was her who she talked to.
That was her yeah. Yeah, therapy buddy.
And she doesn't have that anymore. So again, we see, as we saw in episode one with the tawny, how grand it is. The hunt here is absolutely huge. And I don't know if you remember in season one of Game of Thrones when Robert goes hunting and it's literally like Robert, one other, like Jamie, I think, is there, and Lancel, and then like another man with a spear. That's kind of it. And they just walk.
It's pretty boutique effort. Yeah.
And then here we have this massive, I mean, they have essentially built a small town.
Yes.
Like a little village for this hunt with a huge pavilion that's properly outfitted with carpet and furniture. And you just think, this is mad. I mean, they bought all this stuff from King's Landing to kind of rebuild it out here in the countryside.
And also, isn't this wood that they go to hunt like only 40 miles outside of King's
yeah,
Landing?
Yeah, but it's quite a big, to the south. It's quite a big effort.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we meet.
Oh, we should say as well, this is the wood where King Robert had his accident.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, they're foreshadowing.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
Definitely. So we see lots of the families and we hear some of the names, which is great. We meet the Strongs, who we've met Lord Lionel Strong.
Yeah.
But now we're going to meet his sons. We see more Lannisters, we see more Hightowers, we see more Redwines, and there are other noble houses there. And we are going to catch our first glimpses of Sir Harwin Strong, who will be very important. And I love Sir Harwin. I think he's great. His nickname is Breakbones, and he's supposed to be the strongest man in the kingdom.
Wow, what yeah, a great name.
It's a good name, isn't it? And then we also see his brother Larys, whose slightly less impressive nickname is the Clubfoot, because he has a clubfoot.
The club sandwich.
So everyone's eating and drinking in this massive pavilion and Rhaenyra is sulking around, listening to conversations and being rude to people. Everyone is talking about what's happening in the Stepstones and Rhaenyra is very rude again to the ladies, again showing her that lack of political
She's
nouse.
Not prepared to play the game. She's above the system and it's infuriating to watch
yeah.
because she could so easily play to her advantages
yeah.
and be the heir that everyone needs to see her being in public.
Yeah.
But she refuses to do it. And I've got in my notes, because you've said she's rude to the ladies. Lady Kira, she's rude.
Yes.
They're all rude.
Yes.
I think they're all taking the opportunity to kind of give her a bit of a slap whilst Viserys is out of the picture.
Well, I think there is a bit of poking Rhaenyra. And I think it does again feed into her sense that nobody really wants her. Nobody's there for her. And nobody wants her to be the queen.
Yeah.
But her reaction then kind of reinforces that she's not ready to be the queen, because if she comported herself with dignity...
She can't be civil.
Yeah.
She can't bite her tongue.
Yeah. And rose above it and was able to play the game. I mean, the one thing that Viserys is... I mean, we'll talk about Viserys in this episode, but I mean, his smile, he keeps it on his face the whole... It kind of curdles as the episode goes on. But he does still manage to have that kind of false smile the whole way through of just like, I'm the king. I must kind of preserve this poker face.
This is my party and yeah. I cry if
Rhaenyra
I want to.
Rhaenyra has no poker face.
No, she's not very good at hiding her true feelings,
no.
is she? And poor old Alicent does try to come to her defence in this scene quite a few times and even tries to do a little bit of like, you know, a cross gaze, like when they're insulting Lady Kira, but Rhaenyra's just not having it.
Yeah. And if Rhaenyra could only swallow her pride a little bit to work with Alicent, she would have an ally there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why it's just such a shame, because they're both lonely. You can see they miss each other, but they've got into that awful sort of thing now where they just can't get past the walls that Rhaenyra in particular is putting up.
They probably can't even remember what was the reason that they started.
Well, that baby.
Well, maybe, yeah.
You know, where did the baby come from?
Disinherited.
It's because of you're having sex with my dad.
That is quite a big reminder every time she walks into the room. Yeah, fair enough.
Every day. And the big pregnant belly probably doesn't help either.
Can I just say at the beginning of the scene, talking about inappropriate sex, there's a little bit of gossip. Lady Kira says that Lady Joanna has been kidnapped and is probably been sold into a pillow house in the Free Cities.
Oh.
Did you catch that?
No. Who is Lady Joanna?
Well, we don't know. I mean, this poor lady, she was on a ship somewhere going through a passage and she's been kidnapped by pirates and sold into slavery.
Hmm.
So anyway.
No one went to get her back. Well, this is because of Viserys, you see.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, because of his lack of help. Ah, pugs.
Yes. The other thing I had in my notes was Lady Redwine has a very cute pug. I just thought...
That's what pugs do.
We're counting dragons every time they appear. We can count pugs as well.
Well, we don't really see the... Because I think in Game of Thrones, there's one cat. And I think that's about it.
So now we've got a pug.
And then obviously the direwolves. But they're not really pets in the conventional sense.
But pugs, popular nowadays. They were an ancient Chinese pet.
They were temple dogs, weren't they?
Yeah, 4th century. Mm. So before...
And then lots of people had
before Jesus.
Those kind of little lap dogs. And they'd have... You could get really, really small ones, which are called teacup dogs, which I think is a bit...
Oh, wow.
Literally the idea that they could sit in a teacup.
In a teacup.
Yeah.
Scared I'd sit on it all.
Well, I think they're a bit creepy, inbred and weird, but...
Anyway, moving away from the Lady Lunch.
Tiny, tiny dogs. We now see Lord Jason Lannister. We saw Lord Tyland Lannister. Lord Jason is the older brother. They're twins. Lots of twins in the Lannister gene pool. He approaches Rhaenyra and he has a proposal for her. It's a pretty awkward proposal because Rhaenyra has not been given any intel on this. So he starts talking about his great home at Castle Rock and how it's great.
You should come over sometime.
And he's going to build her a 4-car garage. Dude. And it's all going to be amazing. And there'll be no loss of anything for her. And she's just like, what? What
who
now?
Are you?
So, yes. She is just not impressed by this, but obviously, again, reconfirms this idea that she's got in her head that this plot to disinherit her is thickening.
Yeah, absolutely. She's just infuriated by his sleazy offer. I just felt like he was taking a line from Otto's playbook there.
Yeah, and you don't even know if these people have even talked before. And then suddenly it's like, oh, we're getting married. And it's like, hello? You know, maybe a little bit of small talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And can I just say, on his offer to build a dragon pit, I was reminded that dragon pits are absolutely bloody ginormous. Just doing a bit of reading into them. One of the big dragon pits in Game of Thrones had 40 undervolts for dragons to nest in.
The main one.
And 30 knights could ride abreast into its entrance.
Yeah, so it's like a colossus.
So they're not like sheds. No. So when Jason Lannister was saying, I can build you a dragon pit, I think, Rhaenyra was just like, what the hell are you talking about? Mm.
But also it's like, he doesn't have a dragon. So obviously she's a bit like, why would you need a dragon pit? And then it's like, oh.
Well, there's that point.
For me. And then it's like, oh, I think it comes completely out of the blue to her. And she's like, I don't understand why we're having this conversation. So... She then goes and talks to her father. This does not go well.
It does not. It
does not go well. And it's very inappropriate. They're basically fighting angrily and loudly in front of the whole court.
This will be on Westerosi Instagram the next day.
It just should not be happening. They should be having this conversation quietly somewhere out of the public view. Rhaenyra is just pretty much accuses Viserys of planning to disinherit her. He's like, what? I'm not going to. And they just have this massive, massive row and everyone is looking and it's not great.
Yeah, it's got to that stage now where it's just spilling over into public and it's damaging her interests as the heir and it's making everything just so much more untenable.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I think it just again shows Rhaenyra's immaturity.
100%.
That she and I like Rhaenyra, but she really does need to just kind of wind her neck in and go, okay, I'm upset, I'm worried, but there's plenty of private spaces in these massive castles where I could go and talk quietly to my dad rather than having a
blazing 6-foot stone walls and big chunky wooden doors.
Yeah.
And we could just have our Mardy in there and no one needs to hear about
rather
it.
Rather than blazing rows in front of the entire court.
And also it's little baby Eggy Bread's birthday and why spoil that.
See, that's worse. Eggy bread is worse than Egon.
Jean, as the French would say.
So Rhaenyra, in her rage, just jumps on a horse and gallops off at full tilt into the forest. Sir Criston, luckily, is watching, though not really close by, but at least sees her. He grabs a horse, gallops after her, and just stops her from like riding full tilt into a lake, which would have been an interesting end to the series.
As they just fish her body out.
Yeah.
Morbid.
And then they walk and they talk and Rhaenyra is saying she hasn't got any power and she can't do anything. And she just, it's the same, like poor little me, essentially. This episode is poor little Rhaenyra. And so Criston reminds her that he was no one from nowhere until he met her. And so she does have power because she had the power to change his life. And his station and status in life entirely depends on her. She's also talking about, you know, that she has no power to make her own marriage or to arrange her life. And he says, I've never been betrothed, but I could have been as a lowborn girl, but not obviously. Now he's got aspirations to be part of the court, but he's a Kingsguard, so he can never be married now.
The only other thing I was going to say about that scene was it just reminded me of the difference between the court setup, the court atmosphere in House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones. The court isn't lethal. It isn't dangerous in House of the Dragon. Obviously, we're just coming out of peacetime. They don't quite know that yet. But there's no one trying to assassinate the princess.
No.
There's no one desperately plotting against the king. The servants do what they're told.
Well, I think people are generally
the wider
happy.
Aristocracy, yeah. Just they're a bit bitchy and gossipy.
Yeah,
but exactly. They're happy. They're content. They've got what's theirs. No one's plotting to overthrow anyone.
I was actually just having a quick bit of a quick look at Fire and Blood the other day, The World of Ice and Fire, actually. And Viserys inherited from Jaehaerys a realm at peace and the treasury busting with money.
Yeah.
And so it's a good time for the nation. They called it a nation. The kingdom.
The realm.
Yeah. It's a good time for the realm. It's not a good time for Rhaenyra personally. But and obviously the issues around the succession are the thing that's haunting everybody. But other than that, it's a time of peace and prosperity generally. Yeah. And so most people, they have time to gossip and be bitchy because they're not fighting for their lives.
It's just a reminder that the Targaryens are apex predators. They don't have anyone above them in the food chain.
Exactly.
The only way that the bad stuff is going to happen is that they're going to start killing each other. Is this the first scene that we have with Sir Findus Crispy Pancake and Rhaenyra?
Where are you getting these names?
I'm just a genius of my comic mind. Is this the first time they have some...
I closed my eyes then.
Yes, reader, I laughed at his jokes.
Oh, God.
To quote Jane Eyre. Is this the first time they've been together? Is this the first time that he's properly being able to...
It's the first time
we've seen them together. Because they've been doing this for 3 years,
yeah.
Probably.
By this time, they would know each other quite well. And he's been looking after her for the last 3 years. And it's the first time we really see him talk.
Yeah.
As, on a human level, as opposed to the kind of interview experience, which is obviously you're trying to make a good impression. Now he's being quite natural with Rhaenyra.
But again, it's 3 years on and rewatching the series for a second, third, fourth time. I'm struck by how brittle and how distant their relationship is still after 3 years. Obviously, there would have been that distance between them. She's a princess and he's her knight. I don't know. I just would have expected more closeness, I guess.
Yeah, I guess the Christendom.
I'm just wondering if that time jump doesn't quite work with some of the dramatic points in the show.
I think also maybe, though, he is still, because he is lowborn, maybe he's just always very conscious of that and doesn't want to assume or overstep.
Yeah.
And so he's just
We're just getting this snapshot. We need more footage. Yeah. We need more Big Brother House footage.
I mean, the fact that he grabs her bridle and stuff is quite... I mean, he's saving her life. They are intimate, but
where should he have grabbed her pigtails or?
Well, no. I mean, he could have ridden his horse in front of hers and steered it off rather than touching her.
You sound like you've done this before.
I have stopped a bolting horse, but I was on it, which is slightly different.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, Rhaenyra wanted to, she's obviously wanting her horse to bolt. She just doesn't realise that she's going directly towards a lake.
Yeah.
The huntsmen come back and report that a white hart has been seen, which is a good omen. And yes, the whole business when they go out and they find the poo.
That's what I've got in my notes. That's the only feedback I've got on this scene is in big letters, Viserys sniffs the droppings.
Yes. He takes his glove off as well to pick it up. It's like you have a glove on. Wouldn't you keep the glove on?
I would
when
keep
you're
the glove
picking
on.
Up poo. Yeah.
I suppose if you're picking up poo with your hand, you can then wash your hand if you get it on your glove.
They're the king. Just take off the gloves and throw them at a servant.
I just think those gloves are awful anyway. Oh, wow. They're so ill-fitting.
Well, his fingers are a little bit not what they were.
True, true.
So I think that's part of the reason why he wears the gloves all the time, to cover up the rotting pinky.
They just look like gloves that have been made by someone who's never worn gloves or has hands.
Anyway, yeah, sniffing droppings is gross. Don't do it. Viserys drinks alone. He's on a he's sitting on a little platform
on his like dais. Sort of,
yes, yeah. Is that how you say that word? I was I'll see it written down and don't know how to say.
I think it's dais.
Yeah, he's got a little platform like a stage.
Yeah,
and a throne, and he's sitting there all by himself drinking, and it is really sad. He doesn't look happy. He's not having a great time, and he's all alone. And it's like you're kind of going,
yeah,
you're here with all the nobility. Why can't you just go and sit with everyone else?
Well, and then he has some kind of eye contact with Alicent, who's sitting at the cat's table somewhere, and
it's just
she gives him
sad.
A little longing, nice
that
look.
He's there all by himself.
He just can't connect. He's in a funk, isn't he?
Well, and he's the king, and I think it's that thing of like, I have to sit here on my throne and be the king. It's performative kingliness almost.
Yes.
Lord Jason is just a tool.
Sugar that pill.
Lord Jason turns up with a golden spear, which is a weird thing. Every time I talk about this spear, it's like gold is quite a soft metal.
Yeah.
You don't get to use
gold. It's an alloy, isn't it?
No, gold is the purest of metals, which is why it's soft. Or do you mean his spear is...
Well,
it's
I thought it would be gold plated, like it would be an alloy because toughened up.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just like this squishy thing that you're trying to kill something with and it doesn't work.
It doesn't have like a tassel squishy. On it.
Yes, it's everything about
it. It's just too overdressed.
It.
Yeah. Who dresses a spear with a tassel? A bow.
He brings this maybe. Spear and he's like, my lord. And
is that your...
your highness, whatever. But gives him this spear, which is made from the gold of Casterly Rock. And it's look how rich we are. We have all the money. And during their conversation, the way that Jason is talking, Jason as well, Jason. Everyone else is like Tyland and Viserys. And
then suddenly you get a Jason.
Jason.
Kevin.
I was like, Jason is not... Anyway, he is clear from the way he's talking about his prospective proposal to Rhaenyra that everyone is expecting that Viserys is going to name Aegon as his heir.
Yeah.
And so Jason's almost offering himself up as a kind of consolation prize to Rhaenyra when she's no longer the queen. She'll be like the Lady of Casterly Rock.
It's just bad timing on his part.
Yeah.
He's got ahead of the curve, hasn't
yeah.
he? He needs to let this gossip... get to kind of terminal velocity and everyone accept it, but he's getting in there too early.
So Viserys points out that any kind of hint about wanting to change the succession at this point would be treason. He's quite cold with Lord Jason, and then he pointedly thanks him for the spear in a very sarcastic sort of way, and then proceeds to get himself
wine
really, 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 really drunk,
and another shot of those really awful gloves.
But it's like he's literally pouring, it's like someone lighting a cigarette from the butt of the last one. It's like, just keep the wine coming. And it's and I just felt for Viserys in this whole episode because I mean everyone clearly is like, you have a son.
He's isolated.
Yeah.
And yeah, he has an outburst, doesn't he, quite soon. And he tells us what he's really thinking.
Then we get, having had one person proposing a ridiculous marriage alliance, we then get Otto.
Oh,
Otto.
I did love my own lady wife.
But what is he thinking? I mean, he comes over and he suggests that Rhaenyra should marry her 2-year-old brother. And Viserys literally looks at him, looks at the baby, looks at him, and then just laughs in his face. And it is like, this is just ridiculous. Aegon is still in nappies. He can't feed himself. Rhaenyra is 17 at this point.
Give them time.
And this Otto thinks this is the solution.
He says this might be a more kind of palatable solution closer to home.
To who?
To marry her brother. And it did make me laugh when I was reading about this episode online. Someone said, this isn't close to home. The call is coming from inside the house. It's pretty horrible.
I know, but even, I mean, obviously, Viserys is perfectly...
Even for the Targaryens.
Viserys is perfectly used to the idea that they would marry brother to sister. But even he's just kind of go, you don't marry a toddler to a woman. That's the thing. Even if Aegon was like 12 and Rhaenyra was 17, that would be problematic, but it would make more sense. This just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It does not.
And Viserys, I think at this point, just loses it with everyone. He's had enough.
He has a great line where he says, I came here to hunt, not to be suffocated by all this fucking politicking.
Yeah. He wants to party.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he doesn't want to be bothered
with all this incest chat.
Well, I can understand that. But I think it's like, as well, I think Viserys is, it's a real struggle with him because I feel really sorry for him. But then at the same time, he just needs to be clear.
Yeah.
Because he allows these doubts.
He's just
the
sad
doubts.
King that didn't. He just keeps not acting when he needs to.
He allows people to have these conversations because he's not saying.
Well, he's creating a vacuum.
Yeah. He's not saying, it's Rhaenyra. There's no question. He's saying, I don't want to talk about this. He's not saying, no, Rhaenyra is my heir. I hate people say end of, but that's
end
what,
of.
Yeah, but that's actually what he needs
Period.
To say. We're not talking about this anymore. Rhaenyra is the heir. Stop it, Otto. Now go away and bring me more wine.
And bring me new gloves.
All the wine.
Take the spear with you.
Now, dear old Lord Lionel Strong comes over to the king. And this is what I mean about the curdling smile, because I think all through these scenes, Viserys' smile has just got more and more like sour. He's like still sort of smiling, but it's through gritted teeth. And every time someone is coming up to him, they're asking him for something that is in their own interests.
I think he's getting a bit manic at this stage.
And he assumes that obviously Lord Lionel's going to be wanting something from him. But instead, Lionel, who's a decent bloke, suggests that it would make sense for Rhaenyra to marry Laenor Velaryon, which makes complete sense because we had this whole situation where the Velaryons felt spurned last episode when their daughter Laenor was rejected by Viserys.
Yeah.
And this would be a way of reuniting the two great Valyrian houses and recreating that harmony where there's now a rift.
So rather than Viserys marry a 12-year-old girl, actually Rhaenyra and Laenor, who are closer in age.
Age appropriate.
And are cousins.
Yes.
They could marry instead.
Yes.
I think this is a great suggestion. This is why we keep Lord Lionel Strong on the payroll.
Exactly. And he is a good bloke and he is honest and he gives good advice and he's not just there like with his agenda constantly.
Would you swipe right or left?
On Lionel.
On Lionel.
I swipe.
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 Oh, that's very telling.
Which is it, right or left? Which is, I don't know. Which.
I was hoping you'd know.
No, I don't know. I think right might be yes, thumbs up. Left right. Might be rejection. I would swipe right on Sir Harwin. On Lionel.
Okay, yeah.
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 I'm a Harwin stan. So again, Viserys seems depressed, which might have something to do with the amount of alcohol he's consuming. I don't think that helps.
No.
He is really, really drunk. So Kristen and Rhaenyra's refusing to go back to the camp. She doesn't want to go back. She'd rather die in the woods alone. I mean, she is in that kind of teenage mood of like, I don't die and no one would even care. She's probably planning her funeral.
She's in a Walden phase.
She's probably planning her funeral. She's got the playlist. You know, she is in that kind of...
She'll have Samwise playing.
Yeah. Nobody
the best
knows.
Power ballads.
Nobody has ever suffered the way I suffer kind of vibe. So they make a fire. So Kristen stays with her. They prepare to sleep in the woods. They obviously haven't had anything to eat and they're just sitting there getting ready for bed. And then we hear a sort of rustling in the undergrowth and a boar.
It's not Otto, it's a boar.
It's not Otto.
It's not Otto on all fours. Sniffing droppings.
Oh, God. So Kristen manages to get a really good blow in with his sword, narrowly missing Rhaenyra's face.
Yeah, I did notice that second time round.
But it's Rhaenyra.
It's Rhaenyra who really does the dirty.
All of that rage.
I felt sorry for the boar.
But all of that rage, the frustration, the misery, the anger, she takes it all out on that boar.
Wow. There's no aerobics or jazzercise to go to and get out all your stress in Westeros. It's the boar.
And we've heard before about the wild blood of the Targaryens and we see it here. Rhaenyra has that kind of almost feral energy when she's killing the boar.
Yeah.
Her vibe is like that of almost a wild animal.
And again, we have echoes of what you were saying before about Rhaenyra being very naive about how to be a member of the royal family and her status and how she needs to play the game. She says to Crispy at one point, do you think the realm will accept me as their queen? And he, clearly playing into her ego and her sense of kind of being a bit deflated and isolated, says they'll have no chance but to. Well, no, he says they'll have no choice but to, princess. Which
is obviously not true because there's now a boy.
She needs a better kind of confidant or advisor on her
there's
side.
There's a boy
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
And I mean, also I think Kristen, not Crispy, Kristen says what he thinks she wants to hear. But we've already had that before with Rhaenys last episode where it was the same thing. I'll make them. And it's Rhaenyra's assumption that she will get her way. And I think that she... This is why she's not learning that you have to bring people with you. You can't just order them to do as you say. And as we already had talked about as well, is that she's not getting the training that she needs. And Viserys is just kind of drinking and not really working on her apprenticeship or giving her the skills that would help her
to be a good ruler. He's very remiss.
Yeah. So we see Viserys still drinking. Honestly, he's had so much wine. And he is talking to Alicent about the succession, and he does question his decision to make Rhaenyra heir. And he refers again to the prophecy, the dream that he had, which he tells Emma about, and that there had to be a boy, there would be a boy. And it never happened. It killed Emma.
I just thought that bit was heartbreaking when he says, and my obsession killed Rhaenyra's mother. And it's all just this dream he's had.
Yeah.
That he couldn't get back. He had it once and he was searching for it. He thought that was the answer to securing peace in the kingdom. And he's just now completely unsure of himself.
Yeah.
And adrift.
And obviously he knows, he names Rhaenyra heir because he has to have an heir.
Yeah.
But that has not solved the problems. It's kind of created a whole new slew of problems. And then the fact that he's married and now has a son, the realm going on law and precedent, as we discussed before, expects there's a boy. Why would you have a girl? There's a boy. And much like in this country, you know, in even 50 years ago, if you had a son, the son, even if they were second or third in line in the order, they took precedence. Mm. And so I think it makes complete sense that this is happening. And this is why Viserys is remiss, because he is so sad and he does feel like he's a bit lost. But he also needs to say it is Rhaenyra, or he needs to name Aegon. He can't keep flip-flopping, because this is why there's this confusion with his subjects. They don't know what's happening and they need clarity, even if they're saying, well, we don't want Rhaenyra. But at least if he kept, they could do like a propaganda thing with her and like make her more acceptable if they were working on it. But they're just not. They're kind of ignoring it.
You're a PR expert. What would be your advice to Viserys? How would you set up a campaign for Rhaenyra as the heir?
Well, I think Otto, obviously, as the Hand, should be singing Rhaenyra's praises in whatever kind of... I don't know how news really... Obviously, they have the ravens and those go to the noble families, but I don't know how the small folk get their information. You know, in Rome, they had like a person who used to come out on the steps every day and like announce...
Yeah.
What was going on, so that people then heard the news. So the Catan Crier kind of thing, sort of talking about Princess Rhaenyra and her, all her good works and things, like Marjorie did in Game of Thrones, going around feeding the poor.
Yeah.
Just get her feeding out and about.
Feeding those positive messages into the grapevine.
Yeah, get her seen by people, cutting ribbons on supermarket openings, that kind of thing.
Kissing babies that she later marries.
No, she's not marrying a baby. No, Rhaenyra. No baby. Then we see the next morning, Viserys unsurprisingly has a killer hangover. And I guess milk of the poppy might be a bit much for a hangover. So there's no medicine.
No heroin. No.
So they bring him out and it's horrid. It's like those awful when people go on safari and they shoot a drugged lion. This is basically that. This stag has been tied down, can't get away. A man kind of comes over and goes, right, now just stab it right here.
And he still can't do it.
And he can't do it because he's really hungover. And also we know that he's not 100% in his body. The realm doesn't know that yet, but we know that he's not very well.
This is a very public display of that now, isn't it?
And he misses like three times. And it's really awful. This animal's like bellowing and screaming and obviously in pain and scared. And there's no White Hart, which was the omen that was promised, that was going to be this kind of like the god setting some sort of seal on Viserys's kingship.
Didn't make an appearance. Can I just say that brown stag was the first bit of dodgy CGI that we've seen.
It's a real stag.
In House of Dragon. Obviously. Not a real stag.
Paddy Considine killed it 15 times. They kept bringing in new ones. That would be awful.
This is the kind of info you get with an unauthorized show.
Yeah. I did not really notice it being dodgy because I was really just feeling sorry for it because I didn't like it being killed on camera like that. I thought it was horrid.
Because it was dodgy, I thought this isn't real. This isn't as affecting, but interesting.
But obviously we know that no animals can be harmed in the making of programs, so obviously it's not real.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is, there's definitely that, the fact that he's struggling. We've already seen that the throne has bitten him and rejected him. Now he's struggling to kill the stag. So all of these things are like these little ticks in the boxes of Viserys is not up to scratch.
Yeah.
He's not doing what he needs to do. And we then see Rhaenyra, and so Kristen, they're kind of standing on some sort of bluff looking out over the woods. I think Rhaenyra is sort of thinking, do I have to go back to the court? And then we see the white stag and it comes to bless Rhaenyra.
Yes. So the gods have chosen her. This is a sign that she is the one true heir.
Yeah. Now, the Kristen starts to get out his sword and Rhaenyra says no. And afterwards I was like, but why?
I think it's because she feels some kind of affinity with the white stag.
Yeah.
It's just like this animal that lives all by itself. It's different from the rest of the pack. It's isolated, doesn't have other stags to talk to or understand it. I mean, isn't that basically Rhaenyra?
Episodes 1 to 3 so far? But we've had this whole thing of like, no one wants her, no one likes her. Poor, pity me.
Oh, you're asking, why doesn't she kill it so she can take it back to camp and say, look,
I am the heir.
Propaganda.
Yes. The gods of the woods or whatever have sent this stag to me, not to that baby, to me.
There's me thinking she's just empathetic, she's a good soul, and there's you saying she's missed a critical opportunity.
I think so. This is a propaganda opportunity that she's missed. If she had gone back with the stag, then I think people would have been very hard for them to say that she wasn't destined to be the queen. And she could have done it in front of the whole court. It would have been a real like killer blow for her propaganda machine.
Yeah. You're right.
She does go back with an animal, but it's just a dead boar. And she's covered in blood from her kill. Because she's killed the boar with quite a small dagger. Stabbed it. So obviously every time she stabbed it, a bit more blood's gone over her. And despite the fact that we saw them near a really big lake, she didn't wash her face. So as they...
It's strategic. I think she wants to look at a bit disheveled and wild.
So as she comes in, the other lords, like old Jason, I think, is going, God, thank goodness she didn't want to marry me because I don't really want to be married to this blood-stained...
She's frightful.
Blood-stained hussy.
Uncombed hair.
But we see Sir Harwin and his eyes light up at the sight of her and he gives her a really big grin. He obviously is like, go, princess. You go, girl. Covered in blood. Then we head back to King's Landing. Otto visits Alicent and is just, ugh. But he's pushing Aegon's claim and saying, you need to get the king to name Aegon. And Alicent's like, of course, Dad. And then she goes to see Viserys and she says nothing about Aegon.
She's still on Rhaenyra's side.
I think she's on Rhaenyra's side, but I think she also knows very well, especially if she sees it when Viserys is hungover and in this mood, if she comes in going, what about Aegon? Are you going to name Aegon? Have you thought about Aegon? Aegon, he will just tell her to fuck off.
Yeah.
And I think she knows that.
He's a contrary fellow.
Yeah. I think she's quite sensible here. And it is that soft power and it is that thing of just like, you know.
Picking her battles.
Yeah. Do it when the time is right. And right now it isn't.
She is the Brené Brown of Westeros.
Is she?
She leans into her vulnerability. She picks her battles. And she's just there for people, but she's got boundaries.
Yes. But I think it's interesting that she pretty much...
I'm amazed that you agreed to all of that.
I just agree. Whatever you say, you're the king. I'm just some grub.
Pillow house girl. Silence.
So Alicent and Viserys are talking about Rhaenyra's marriage prospects. And obviously, again, she does need to get married. It's important. These are strategic alliances.
Yeah.
So she needs to marry somebody. But as Alicent points out, because she knows Rhaenyra and she understands, and so I think does Viserys, is that they will get on a lot better with Rhaenyra if they give her the illusion of choice. Obviously, it's still not really going to be a free choice because she's still got to marry a nobleman or a Targaryen. And there aren't that many of them. So she will have a load of men kind of laid out in front of her and then it'll be pick one.
It'll be a smorgasbord, but she's off the conveyor belt. I think she just felt so out of control or not in control. This is definitely a step up for
her. And I think it's also being blindsided like by by Lord Jason just coming up and going, when we're married, and she's like, excuse me? So I think this is the thing. If she's given some sort of illusion of control that she's running the show, I think that will help her. And I think Alison's absolutely right about that. And she understands.
Yeah.
She does understand her friend. We also see that the war in the Stepstones is now at a point of desperation and they need the king to help. Viserys is still reluctant to send aid and Alicent manages to persuade him, which so again showing her soft power here.
Yes.
That she can talk to the king in that gentle way and get him to do things that if you came barging in going, we must do this. he would probably stubbornly refuse to.
Well, and I think his thinking on the Stepstones is clearly dominated by the rivalry he has with Damon. He's not thinking clearly or laterally on this. So she's just able to cut through all of that bullshit. And I've got in my notes here, Alison is a better hand than Otto, which wouldn't be difficult.
No. Well, now Otto only cares about Aegon. He's really not that interested in anything else.
True.
I mean, that's essentially his one focus. We see Rhaenyra and Viserys arguing again. This is Rhaenyra, really, because Viserys is just trying to kind of cut through this and say, look, I'm not going to disinherit you. I love you. You're my daughter. I want you to be happy. And I mean, he said earlier, because she says, you can't make me your political problem. And he's like, you are my political problem, because her stubbornness, her behavior and everything is what's causing all these issues. But he says, I want you to be happy. I love you. And I want you to make your own match. And this is something that I think Rhaenyra is surprised by, because I think she's gone in fists up expecting to be told that
she's ready for a fight.
Yeah, that she's going to marry Sir Lord Jason. And she's just like, oh, it's all changed. I don't have to.
And there's that moment where he says he did waver over her being his heir at one point, but he believes in her now. And he swears on Emma's memory that she will not be supplanted. Yeah, and it's kind of like the family's back together.
Yes, and I think that invoking Emma's name is obviously very powerful.
It's bringing some sense of unity, which has been missing for many years.
You get the sense they've not talked about Emma since she died.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, well,
this is a big deal.
Yeah, and this is, again, you know, another healing conversation that they needed to have. And Rhaenyra, I think you can almost see her shoulders drop, and it's like she kind of relaxes, and it's like, my dad isn't going to kick me out of the succession, and actually I am going to be the queen.
I've got some breathing space.
I can run this. A messenger arrives at the Stepstones. Daemon reads it. It's a letter from Viserys saying that ships are on the way. Daemon is livid, which I remember the first time I saw this, I didn't understand it because I thought he'd be glad. And then instead of which, he tries to beat the messenger to death with his helmet, which seemed a little bit harsh to the messenger because you know the rules. Don't shoot the messenger. But what it is that Daemon wants to win the war himself because he wants honour and glory.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to have to rely on his big brother.
Especially not at the 11th hour after they've been doing this for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think he was especially, Daemon was especially pissed off because Vaemond has gone behind his back to ask the king for this support.
Oh, well, Vaemond, we should say who he is. I don't think we've met Vaemond before.
We haven't met Vaemond before. Mm. So Vaemond is the brother of Corlys.
Yes, he is. He will be a thorn in Daemon's side in future. So because Daemon is determined to win this war before the support can come from Viserys, he pushes through. He sets to draw out the crab feeder by pretending to surrender. So he takes a white flag, he goes down onto the beach and he draws out the crab feeder's troops. He does get wounded, but we have Laenor, who's on his dragon's sea smoke.
He gets three arrows stuck in him, which is pretty fatal, isn't it?
Apparently not if you're Daemon.
Well, okay.
And
great body armor.
And then we have ground troops as well. And then they finally manage to win the battle. And Daemon, the crab feeder, retreats into the caves, which is his well-worn kind of, this is what I do. But this time, Daemon goes into the caves after him and he kills him and comes out absolutely soaked in blood. And it is the most heavy metal cover art.
Yes. It's very Iron Maiden. Yeah. Very.
Iron Daemon. And
with the bisected crab feeder.
Yeah, bit of the, not all of the crab feeder.
Didn't you just think this was a big anticlimax though, this guy? Yeah. Like we said, he's not really had any lines. We've hardly seen him, but he's been this big looming threat in the wings and he's killed off scene.
And one of the things that I really did think was very odd is that, again, now that we know it's grayscale, when that happened to Daemon, I was like, he's covered in the crab feeder's blood.
Yeah.
Will he get grayscale? Tune in next week to find out. But yeah, it's just because we've been told in Game of Thrones that grayscale is so contagious and so deadly and so awful. And so you're just kind of going, is it grayscale? What's going on?
Maybe back in the day, 200 years before Game of Thrones, it just, you know, it's mutated. Maybe it's just not a really strong strain.
Yeah, I just think it's the way we were told, you know, like when Jorah gets it, you know, he's really careful touch anyone.
And then
it's like, you've got to go and you've got to leave and get away. You can't be with people because you're going to turn into a stone man and then you're going to go mad. And so, it's just, I think inconsistency, but it is interesting. And that is the end of the episode.
Yep. It was a very, very interesting third episode.
It is.
Yeah. Not too sure that that time jump worked for me on all of the dramatic points that we've talked about, but we've definitely moved things on in terms of, I feel like Viserys had a proper emotional outburst.
Yes.
In this episode and got a lot of that Kin attention out, which was, I think, is really important for the engineering of the plot as we go into episode four.
And I think we're also starting to see more now that, especially with the Hightowers, Otto is really no longer doing anything for the good of the realm.
Yeah. It's all self-interest.
Yeah. He completely has an agenda, and that is his brother is whispering in his ear and he's whispering in Alicent's ear, and they are trying to move the king like a chess piece.
Yeah.
And I think thankfully at the moment Alicent is still resisting that and is being leal, as they say. But how much longer that's going to go on?
She's been what?
Leal.
Leal? As in like the place in France?
No, as in the archaic form of loyal.
Oh, leal?
Leal. L-E-A-L.
Nice. Is that an actual word?
Yes.
Okay. Fine.
It turned into loyal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. So, yeah, this is a bit of a scene setting episode as well, because obviously we have the kind of early incidents and then now we've got the new royal family and the new issues that are created by the fact that there are these, at this point. And then that's now the thing that's going to kind of spark the next kind of dramatic incidences.
Well, babe, actually seeing baby Aegon for the first time in this episode as a two-year-old, he's the ticking time bomb, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Because obviously when we it was like, oh, well, I'm just going to marry Alicent. But we didn't know at that point whether they were going to have children, whether it was, you know, at that point, you don't even know if it's possible. You always wonder if they had so much trouble having a baby the first time around, that could be partly on the man.
Yeah.
And so the fact that now, obviously, Viserys and Alicent are very fertile and pumping out royal babies is a concern for Rhaenyra. And I really do think that she needs to get her head into this game properly. She's just not playing the game.
She's not. Let's see what happens in the next episode.
So we've got the little specialist subject this week is Arthurian myth. So obviously in this episode, we see this hunting of the white stag, or the white hart as they call it. It's been seen by the king's huntsman and it is described as a good omen. Now, this is not a part of Westerosi or Targaryen myth at all. The showrunners they didn't invent it. It's a real thing, but they've imported it from Arthurian legend and Celtic myths and European myths. And I think the idea is to just give this, because obviously in Game of Thrones, there's a lot of superstition around prophecies and who's going to be the prince who was promised and all of these things. And we don't have that quite so much in House of the Dragon. So they wanted to bring in some of these mystical elements. And this idea that the king is, the potential king or queen is being blessed by the nature gods or the realm in some way. The Celtic people considered white harts. Hart is just an old word for deer. It's H-A-R-T rather than H-E-A-R-T. To be messengers from the other world. And in Arthurian legend, it was claimed that the beast represented mankind's spiritual quest. In the Arthurian legends, the appearance of a white stag often signaled that it was time for Arthur's knights
to go questing. This is what I remember
from
reading Arthurian legends as a child, and also at university, actually.
Yeah, and they often do appear in fiction. If you've read the Narnia books, at the end of this The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, the Pevensey children go hunting the white stag, and that's when they stumble back into our world, because they go into the remote bits of the forest, which they've kind of forgotten about, where the wardrobe is.
Yeah.
And it's like the stag is almost leading them there, because it's time for them to return to their old lives. It's also a symbol of royalty, of purity and of change. It was the personal symbol of King Richard II.
Now, I did know this, and it was given to him by his mother.
Yes.
Who was a fair maiden of Kent.
Yes.
Joan, I think.
Joan of Kent.
Joan of Kent. Yes. Yeah.
We're all fair maidens of Kent.
We are, indeed. Oh.
And it's also associated with Herne the Hunter for obvious reasons, because Herne was also a stag. He had stag.
Who was Herne the Hunter?
And the hunter?
Yeah.
In Celtic mythology, he had the body of a man, but the head of a deer. And he is like the god of the wood.
Oh.
And he...
Like a Celtic Dionysus.
Yeah, he was a bit like Dionysus as well. Less boozy, but quite violent.
Your orgies.
Yeah, but could be quite vicious and deadly. So not an entirely safe god. in the show, as we've discussed, Rhaenyra seeing the White Heart does seem to indicate that the gods in some way blessing her, the fact that she's been chosen as the heir. And as I said, if she had killed it and brought it back, that might have been a really, really useful bit of propaganda for her, especially as we're seeing reinforced over and over again that Viserys is not really fit to be king.
Mm, a missed opportunity.
It was. It's an odd decision.
You've convinced me.
Yeah, it is. I think it's genuinely a really odd decision that she makes there. And I did not understand it. But again, maybe just comes back to what we've talked about with her naivety.
Yeah, and I think I genuinely think she saw the White Heart as a reflection of her own status, not as something that could help her progress.
Yeah, maybe she's feeling that she's a bit of a sacrificial
lamb.
There was
a bit of ego there.
But also maybe at the moment she's feeling like she is beginning to be sacrificed.
Yes.
And sent off to be married.
Hence the empathy point. Yeah. You know, why do I kill the animal that's basically me?
Yeah.
Let it run free. That's what I want to happen.
But unfortunately, if she had actually gone the other way and gone, that is a sign from the gods.
She killed it with a tasseled spear.
Jason didn't give
her
a spear.
She would be on that throne.
But this is where Jason went wrong. If he'd given her that spear.
I'm guessing there'd be spears in the dragon pit that he built her with its 40 undervolts.
The way he carried on, I would have been surprised if she'd even been allowed to ride her dragon. He'd be there, but she'd just have to go down every day and give it a carrot and then go back to sewing banners. He doesn't seem particularly keen on her more wild side.
Do you think he would be quite controlling?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like Julia Roberts in Sleeping with the Enemy.
Rhaenyra, these tins are not in the right order. And you used
these
a
bottles
towel.
Of Dornish wine. Are...
You used a towel and didn't put it back neatly.
And he'd be playing lots of Berlioz.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
And on that note, that's it, really, I think. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
No.
My voice went very shrill.
It did go very shrill.
And I don't know why.
I think we've covered a lot of ground in this episode, and it was a big episode because the whole crab feeder character arc was wrapped up.
I'm actually really glad that
abruptly.
The crab feeder arc was wrapped up because I don't particularly care for it. And next week we're going to see the repercussions of Daemon's victory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to talk about that.
And it's a good one next week. As always, links and things will be in show notes.
Yes, they will be.
On here. And if you are enjoying what we're doing, please tell a friend, write and review, give us subscribe, do all the things.
Give us a subscribe.
Give us a subscribe, please, young person.
I can't talk today.
Press buttons on your interweb phones.
Too much fun over the Easter weekend, and I'm like a bit more like Viserys on the morning of the hunt.
It's fine. We'll warm up. We'll warm up for episode 4. But thank you for listening. And as Michelle says, please do leave us a review, subscribe and like wherever you get your podcasts.
Be someone coherent, able to talk.
Barely. And we will see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.